to. Thorby's wounds healed, those outside quickly, those inside more slowly. The old beggar acquired another mattress and stuck it in the other corner, but Vaslim would sometimes wake to find a small warm bundle snuggled against his spine and know thereby that the boy had had another nightmare. Vaslim was a light sleeper and hated sharing a bed, but he never forced Thorby to go back to his own bed when this happened. Sometimes the boy would cry out his distress without waking. Once Vaslim was jerked awake by hearing Thorby wail, "Mum! Mum!" Without making a light, he crawled quickly to the boy's pallet and bent over him. "There, there, son, it's all right."
"Papa?"
"Go back to sleep, son. You'll wake Mama." He added, "I'll stay with you and you're safe. Now be quiet. We don't want to wake Mama, do we?"
"All right, Papa."
The old man waited, almost without breathing, until he was stiff and cold and his stump ached. When he was satisfied that the boy was asleep, he crawled to his own bed. That incident caused the old man to try hypnosis. A long time earlier, when Vaslim had had two eyes, two legs, and no reason to beg, he had learned the art. But he had never liked hypnosis, even for therapy. He had an almost religious concept of the dignity of the individual. Hypnotizing another person did not fit his basic evaluations, but this was an emergency. He was sure that Thorby had been taken from his parents so young that he had no conscious memory of them. The boy's notion of his life was a jumbled recollection of masters, some bad, some worse, all of whom had tried to break the spirit of a bad boy. Thorby had explicit memories of some of these masters and described them in gutter's speech, vivid and violent. But he was never sure of time or place. Place was some estate or household or factor's compound, never a particular planet or sun. His notions of astronomy were mostly wrong, and he was innocent of galactography. And time was simply before or after, short or long. While each planet has its day, its year, its own method of dating, while they are reconciled for science in terms of the standard second as defined by radioactive decay, the standard year of the birthplace of mankind, and a standard reference date, the first jump from that planet, Sol 3, to its satellite, it was impossible for an illiterate boy to date anything that way. Earth was a myth to Thorby, and a day was the time between two sleeps. Vaslim could not guess the lad's age. The boy looked like unmutated Earth stock and was pre-adolescent, but any guess would be based on unproved assumption. Vandorians and Italoglyphs looked like the original stock. But Vandorians take three times as long to mature. Vaslim recalled the odd tale about the consular agent's daughter, whose second husband was the great-grandson of her first, and she had outlived them both. Mutations do not necessarily show up in appearance. It was conceivable that this boy was older in standard seconds than Vaslim himself. Space is deep, and mankind adapted itself in many ways to many conditions. And never mind. He was a youngster, and he needed help. Thorby was not afraid of hypnosis. The word meant nothing to him, nor did Vaslim explain. After supper one evening, the old man simply said, "Thorby, I want you to do something."
"Sure, Pop, what?"
"Lie down on your bed. Then I'm going to make you sleepy, and we'll talk."
"Huh? You mean the other way around, don't you?"
"No, this is a different sort of sleep. You'll be able to talk." Thorby was dubious but willing. The old man lighted a candle, switched off the glow plates. Using the flame to focus attention, he started the ancient routines of monotonous suggestion, of relaxation, drowsiness, sleep. "Thorby, you are asleep, but you can hear me. You can answer."
"Yes, Pop."
"You will stay asleep until I tell you to wake. But you will be able to answer any question I ask."
"Yes, Pop."
"You remember the ship that brought you here? What was its name?"
"The Merry Widow. Only that wasn't what we called it."
"You remember getting into that ship? Now you're in it. You can see it. You remember all about it. Now go back to where you were when you went aboard. The boy stiffened without waking.
I don't want to.
I'll be right with you. You'll be safe. Now what is the name of the place? Go back to it. Look at it.
An hour and a half later, Baslam still squatted beside the sleeping boy. Sweat poured down wrinkles in his face, and he felt badly shaken. To get the boy back to the time he wanted to explore, it had been necessary to force him back through experiences disgusting even to Baslam, old and hardened as he was. Repeatedly Thorby had fought against it, nor could Baslam blame him. He felt now that he could count the scars on the boy's back and assign a villain to each. But he had achieved his purpose. To delve farther back than the boy's waking memory ran, back into his very early childhood, and at last to the traumatic moment when the baby man-child had been taken from his parents. He left the boy in deep coma while he collected his shattered thoughts. The last few moments of the quest had been so bad that the old man doubted his judgment in trying to dig out the source of the trouble. Well, let's see. What had he found out? The boy was born free, but he had always been sure of that. The boy's native language was System English, spoken with an accent Baslam could not place. It had been blurred by baby speech. That placed him inside the Terran hegemony. It was even possible, though not likely, that the boy had been born on Earth. That was a surprise. He had thought the boy's native language was interlingua, since he spoke it better than he did the other three he knew. What else? Well, the boy's parents were certainly dead, if the confused and terror-ridden memory he had pried out of the boy's skull could be trusted. He had been unable to dig out their family name, nor any way of identifying them. They were just Papa and Mama. So Baslam gave up a half-formed plan of trying to get word to relatives of the boy. Well, now to make this ordeal he had put the lad through worth the cost. Thorby. The boy moaned and stirred.
Yes, Pop?
You're asleep. You won't wake up until I tell you to.
I won't wake up until you tell me to.
When I tell you, you'll awake at once. You'll feel fine, and you won't remember anything we've talked about.
Yes, Pop.
You will forget, but you will feel fine. About half an hour later, you will feel sleepy again. I'll tell you to go to bed, and you will go to bed, and go right to sleep. You'll sleep all night. Good sleep and pleasant dreams. You won't have any more bad dreams. Say it.
I won't have any more bad dreams.
You won't ever have any more bad dreams. Not ever.
Not ever.
Papa and Mama don't want you to have any bad dreams. They're happy, and they want you to be happy. When you dream about them, it will always be happy dreams.
Happy dreams?
Everything is all right now, Thorby. You are starting to wake. You're waking up, and you can't remember what we've been talking about. But you'll never have bad dreams again. Wake up, Thorby. The boy sat up, rubbed his eyes, yawned, and grinned.
Gee, I fell asleep. I guess I played out on you, Pop. Didn't work, huh?
Everything's all right, Thorby.
It took more than one session to lay those ghosts, but the nightmares dwindled and stopped.
Baslam was not technician enough to remove the bad memories. They were still there. All he did was to implant suggestions to keep them from making Thorby unhappy. Nor would Baslam have removed memories had he been skilled enough. He had a stiff-necked belief that a man's experiences belonged to him, and that even the worst should not be taken from him without his consent. Thorby's days were as busy as his nights had become peaceful. During their early partnership, Baslam kept the boy always with him. After breakfast, they would hobble to the Plaza of Liberty. Baslam would sprawl on the pavement, and Thorby would stand or squat beside him, looking starved and holding the bowl. The spot was always picked to obstruct foot traffic, but not enough to cause police to do more than growl. Thorby learned that none of the regular police in the plaza would ever do more than growl. Baslam's arrangements with them were beneficial to underpaid police. Thorby learned the ancient trade quickly, learned that men with women were generous, but that the appeal should be made to the woman, that it was usually a waste of time to ask alms of unaccompanied women, except unveiled women, that it was an even bet between a kick and a gift embracing a man alone, that spacemen hitting dirt gave handsomely. Vaslim taught him to keep a little money in the bowl, neither smallest change nor highest denominations. At first Thorby was just right for the trade. Small, half-starved, covered with sores, his appearance alone was enough. Unfortunately, he soon looked better. Vaslim repaired that with makeup, putting shadows under his eyes and hollows in his cheeks. A horrible plastic device stuck on his shin bone provided a realistic large ulcer in place of the sores he no longer had. Sugar water made it attractive to flies. People looked away, even as they dropped coins in the bowl. His better-fed condition was not as easy to disguise, but he shot up fast for a year or two and continued skinny, despite two hearty meals a day and a bed to doss on. Thorby soaked up a gutter education beyond price.
Jubalpur, capital of Jubal and of the Nine Worlds, residence-in-chief of the Great Sargon, boasts more than 3,000 licensed beggars, twice that number of street vendors, more grog shops than temples, and more temples than any other city in the Nine Worlds, plus numbers uncountable of sneak thieves, tattoo artists, griva pushers, doxies, cat burglars, back-alley money changers, pickpockets, fortune-tellers, muggers, assassins, and grifters, large and small.
Its inhabitants brag that within a li of the pylon at the spaceport end of the Avenue of Nine, anything in the explored universe can be had by a man with cash, from a starship to 10 grains of stardust, from the ruin of a reputation to the robes of a senator with a senator inside. Technically, Thorby was not part of the underworld, since he had a legally recognized status, slave, and a licensed profession, beggar. Nevertheless, he was in it, with a worm's eye view. There were no rungs below his on the social ladder. As a slave, he had learned to lie and steal as naturally as other children learn company manners, and much more quickly. But he discovered that these common talents were raised to high art in the seamy underside of the city. As he grew older, learned the language and the streets, Maslam began to send him out on his own, to run errands, to shop for food, and sometimes to make a pitch by himself, while the old man stayed in. Thus he fell into evil company, if one can fall from Elevation Zero. He returned one day with nothing in his bowl. Vaslim made no comment, but the boy explained,
"Look, Pop, I did all right." From under his clout he drew a fancy scarf and proudly displayed it.
Vaslim did not smile and did not touch it.
"Where did you get that?"
"I inherited it."
"Obviously. But from whom?"
"A lady. A nice lady. Pretty."
"Let me see the house mark." Probably Lady Frasia." "Yes, she is pretty, I suppose. But why aren't you in jail?"
"Why, gee, Pop, it was easy.
Ziggy's been teaching me. He knows all the tricks. He's smooth. You should see him work."
Vaslim wondered how one taught morals to a stray kitten. He did not consider discussing it in abstract ethical terms. There was nothing in the boy's background, nothing in his present environment to make it possible to communicate on such a level.
"Thorby, why do you want to change trades? In our business you pay the police their commission, pay your dues to the guild, make an offering at the temple on holy day, and you have no worries. Have we ever gone hungry?"
"No, Pop, but look at it. It must have cost almost a stellar."
"At least 2 stellars, I'd say.
But a fence would give you 2 minims, if he was feeling generous. You should have brought more than that back in your bowl."
"Well, I'll get better at it, and it's more fun than begging. You ought to see how Ziggy goes about it."
"I've seen Ziggy work. He's skillful."
"He's the best!"
"Still, I suppose he could do better with 2 hands.
"Well, maybe, though you only use 1 hand. But he's teaching me to use either hand."
"That's good. You might need to know. Some day you might find yourself short one, the way Ziggy is. You know how Ziggy lost his hand.
Huh?
You know the penalty, if they catch you.
Thorby did not answer. Baslam went on.
One hand for the first offense. That's what it cost Ziggy to learn his trade. Oh, he's good, for he's still around and plying his trade. You know what the second offense carries? Not just the other hand, you know.
Thorby gulped.
I'm not sure.
I think you must have heard. You don't want to remember.
Maslam drew his thumb across his throat. That's what Ziggy gets next time. They shorten him. His Serenity's justices figure that a boy who can't learn once won't learn twice, so they shorten him.
But, Pop, I won't be caught. I'll be careful, just like today, I promise.
Maslam sighed. The kid still believed that it couldn't happen to him.
Thorby, get your bill of sale.
What for, Pop?
Get it.
The boy fetched it. Baslam examined it. One male child, registered number, left thigh, 8XK40367.
9 minims, and you get out of here, you.
He looked at Thorby and noted with surprise that he was a head taller than he had been that day.
Get my stylus. I'm going to free you. I've always meant to, but there didn't seem to be any hurry. But we'll do it now, and tomorrow you'll go to the Royal Archives and register it.
Thorby's jaw dropped.
What for, Pop?
Don't you want to be free?
Pop, I like belonging to you.
Thanks, lad, but I've got to do it.
You mean you're kicking me out?
No, you can stay, but only as a freedman. You see, son, a master is responsible for his bondservant. If I were a noble and you did something, I'd be fined. But since I'm not, well, if I were shy a hand as well as a leg and an eye, I don't think I could manage. So, if you're going to learn Ziggy's trade, I'd better free you. I can't afford the risk. You'll have to take your own chances. I've lost too much already. Any more, and I'd be better off shortened.
He put it brutally, never mentioning that the law in application was rarely so severe. In practice, the slave was confiscated, sold, and his price used in restitution, if the master had no assets. If the master were a commoner, he might also get a flogging if the judge believed him to be actually, as well as legally, responsible for the slave's misdeed.
Nevertheless, Baslam had stated the law.
Since a master exercised high and low justice over a slave, he was therefore liable in his own person for his slave's acts, even to capital punishment. Thorby started to sob. For the first time since the beginning of their relationship,
Don't tell me loose, Pop. Please don't. I've got to belong to you.
I'm sorry, son. I told you don't have to go away.
Please, Pop, I won't ever swipe another thing.
Baslam took his shoulder.
Look at me, Thorby. I'll make you a bargain.
Huh? Anything you say, Pop, as long as...
Wait till you hear it. I won't sign your papers now, but I want you to promise two things.
Yeah, sure, what?
Don't rush. The first is that you promise never again to steal anything from anybody. Neither from fine ladies in sedan chairs, nor from poor people like ourselves. One is too dangerous, and the other, well, it's disgraceful. Though I don't expect you to know what that means. The second is to promise that you will never lie to me about anything. Not anything.
Thorby said slowly,
I promise.
I don't mean just lying about the money you've been holding out on me, either. I mean anything. By the way, a mattress is no place to hide money. Look at me, Thorby. You know I have connections throughout the city.
Thorby nodded. He had delivered messages for the old man to odd places and unlikely people. Baslam went on,
if you steal, I'll find out. Eventually. If you lie to me, I'll catch you. Eventually. Lying to other people is your business. But I tell you this. Once a man gets a reputation as a liar, he might as well be struck dumb, for people do not listen to the wind. Never mind. The day I learn that you have stolen anything, or the day I catch you lying to me, I sign your papers and free you.
Yes, Pop.
That's not all. I'll kick you out with what you had when I bought you. A breech clout and a set of bruises. You and I will be finished. If I set eyes on you again, I'll spit on your shadow.
Yes, Pop. I never will, Pop.
I hope not. Go to bed.
Daslam lay awake, worrying, wondering if he had been too harsh. But, confound it, it was a harsh world. He had to teach the kid to live in it. He heard a sound like a rodent gnawing. He held still and listened. Presently, he heard the boy get up quietly and go to the table. There followed a muted jingle of coins being placed on wood, and he heard the boy return to his pallet. When the boy started to snore, he was able to drop off to sleep himself.